Anything that is not crucial to where I'm going is now being let go. It also will reset dopamine. So we're in an age where some of the biggest businesses in the world are big because they hijack dopamine circuits. What's a goal that you have for the year? And you say, how can I get this done in 30 days? This is the theory of constraints. You could take the theory of constraints, plug this in. How do I get this done in 30 days? Now, at first, you're going to be like, that's impossible. But the more you think about it, if you had to get it done in 30 days, you would get it done in 30 days.
What if you could build a business in the modern world as big or as small as you want without having to compromise the things that were the most important to you in the very beginning? This is the Wealthy Consultant Talks podcast with Taylor Welch and Mike Walker, as they share with you today their learning lessons from stories and their experiences over the past 10 to 15 years, and share with you right here, right now. Let's get into it.
Let's pull up some things that I was wanting to talk about today in terms of where we are in the year and how we can take the next, I think the next 10 to 15 days. This is what I'm working on. This is what I'm doing. And the idea comes from the phenomena of fasting. Has anybody ever done a fast, intermittent fasting, 2-day fast, 7-day fast? What's the longest you've ever fasted before?
I've done 5 days. And that was like, you know, I didn't have any science to back me up. So I didn't feel confident beyond that. I was just doing it to do it. But really, pretty powerful stuff, man. The sleep you get, like all kinds of stuff. It was wild.
Yeah. So I'm moving into a season where I'm going to be doing a 24-hour fast once a week and a 3-day fast once a month. And the science of fasting is crazy. The spirituality of fasting is even crazier. Mm-hmm. But fasting essentially triggers this thing called autophagy, which is basically a reset of what's important. So, and I'm oversimplifying autophagy a lot because we don't have hours to go through this, but autophagy is basically a forced resetting of the hierarchy of what is important and what is not. So when you go into autophagy, what happens biologically and physiologically is the body kind of goes like, look, the things that we had on life support are no longer important enough for us to devote resources to keeping them alive. So like your mitochondria, you have all of these different cells in the body that don't do anything. They literally do nothing. They're wasted. They're dead. Your body has no business keeping them alive. But the body is kind of like the world's first hoarder. That's what the body is. It's just like, and I don't know if you know any hoarders, but they just got stuff that's like, why do you even have this? You're never going to need this again. But they're like, well, you never know.
You never know.
You never know. The body's like this. The body's like, you never know. Like, we could need this, you know, dead cluster of cells randomly one day, but you don't. You just don't need it. It's not necessary. So autophagy comes in and goes like, nope, no longer necessary. We're going to release these. And it has a cleaning function across your everything. I mean, your digestive system, your mitochondrial system, your lymphatic system, even neurologically, there are things that's like, I don't have the resources to keep this part of the brain firing anymore. So I'm going to let it go. Anything that is not crucial to where I'm going is now being let go. And that's autophagy. It also will reset dopamine. So we're in an age where, I mean, some of the biggest businesses in the world are big because they hijack dopamine circuits. And it's not even good for humans, but it makes money. And so if you've ever felt the effects of addiction, or if you've ever felt the effects of like, I will scroll on my phone for hours. Well, you're being addicted and manipulated through the dopamine circuitry of a Facebook or an Instagram or YouTube or whatever. And so all these things run on dopamine and the neurochemistry of dopamine, which is what controls behavior. Neurochemistry controls what we do. It controls what we don't do. And it's all a predatory overreach of what we've learned about the brain and the body to keep people on a platform, even when the platform is no longer servicing them anymore. This is one of the main reasons why you will see us not really keeping our businesses on Facebook anymore. We've like, forget that. Like it's predatory. And it's not that we won't use Facebook, because we will, but we want to help break some of that so that people are in a new place, a new system, a new platform. And so here's what I would, what I'm going to kind of go through and challenge us to do is using the science of how autophagy works, getting ourselves cleaned out from the last 6 months, the first half of 2025, so that anything that is not crucial for where we're going is not carried around like a ball and chain into the second half of 2025. It's not that you don't have opportunity. That's not what takes people out of the game. What takes people out of the game is that they have too many things they're trying to hang on to at the same time. And so that what's necessary for light to go in and be powerful is the concentration of that light into one channel. And energy is the same way. And so when an entrepreneur is doing 19,000 things at the same time, and it gets worse because if you're an entrepreneur and you're a mom, well, when you massively complicated everything, and you're also a wife and a friend, and you're involved in church, it's like, what? Your brain's just like, forget everything, stay alive. There's too many things going on. And so what we need to do is we need to take the next couple of weeks and we need to simplify massively, but not from an intellectual standpoint, from a physiological standpoint. And so some random things you can do, like controlled experiments. And these are things that I've done before, but I'm doing all of them over the next couple of days. So here's a random example. You take seven days, and you can just like not look at any comments anywhere. No comments. 7 days. You're only, if you post on Facebook, great. Don't look at any comments for 7 days. If you're on YouTube, no comments, no looking at any comments, no dopamine loops, because the way that the brain looks at comments in a weird way, like we look at comments as if we would look at like emotional eating.
Yeah.
You have emotional eaters on the call. I would be one of them, guilty as charged. After the Deep End event, I went and ate Taco Bell because I was like, I'm tired. I'm going to eat some Taco Bell. It's not the best. It wasn't the best move, but it was fun in the moment. And then you feel really bad the next day. Comments work the same way. So anything we're getting dopamine from that is not requiring efforts, which a comment doesn't require any effort, it is telling something about ourselves to ourselves without our permission. And so this will be an incredible example of an experiment you can do. 2 days without food and every time you're hungry, here's another example. Every time you're hungry, sit down and work on your vision. And you begin to turn this, like, I'm hungry, into a cue to focus on your future. And so notice we're playing around with the cues, the triggers, the habit loops that form inside of the mind. And you know, you go for a walk. Every time you're hungry, go pray, go for a walk. Every time you're hungry, sit down, whatever cue you want to build, which is the effect of the habit, you tie it to being hungry. 24 hours, another example of an experiment you can run, 24 hours. Every time you feel like going on social media, you read a book instead. What are we doing? We're substituting a cue using the same trigger that used to get us to do one thing. We're now just taking that river and we're kind of damming it up and pivoting it towards something different. This is one of the fastest and easiest ways to build new habits. Take the trigger that already exists and rewrite it into a new trigger. So these are, come up with your own. If you want help on this, you can ask questions and we'll help you do it. But these controlled experiments, I would highly recommend you doing this over the next couple of weeks so that you can get yourself kind of into a clean position with the right habits, the right mindsets, and the right space for the second half of the year. Another interesting thing that I would do over the next 7 to 10 days is these time compression experiments. What do I mean by time compression? There's this law that says however much time you have is how long you'll get it done. Like it'll take you as long as it needs you to take. And so I just finished my latest book. It's called The Currency of Heaven. And one of the things that I learned again, so these are the most powerful lessons, by the way. The lessons that you relearn 19 times are the best lessons.
Absolutely.
It's like, how many times have I learned what I'm about to tell you?
Yeah.
Way too many times. Hey. But What I realized is that when I had a real deadline that I couldn't move anymore. Now, a deadline that you can move is not really a deadline. And this is not really, it's just a goal. It's kind of just a target. And so I had a deadline for this book, end of March, moved it to the end of April. And then I got to the end of April and I moved that one to the end of May. And then my publisher was like, hey, no, we're done. Like, we're done playing your games. You need to have this thing done by like the second week of May or we're not going to launch. And I was like, okay, here's a real deadline.
They called you out.
I got it done. And so here's a great question here. What's a goal that you have for the year? And you say, how can I get this done in 30 days? This is the theory of constraints. You could take the theory of constraints, plug this in. How do I get this done in 30 days? Now, at first, you're going to be like, that's impossible. Can't get it done in 30 days. But the more you think about it, if you had to get it done in 30 days, you would get it done in 30 days. You would do it. But because there's no constraint, it's just floating out into the others indefinitely. And we never get it done. Because what are we doing? We're on social media. We're doing this random stuff. And it's a really good experiment for you to do. You can also take time compression through the lens of long form habits. So like, how many of you have a goal that you set at the beginning of the year that you have not created that habit yet? Yeah, me, you, probably Leo, probably Mike's probably already done it all.
No, I'm nodding, man. I'm with you. There's things.
Yeah. Sometimes I see Mike's Instagram and he's like out running at 5 a.m. and I'm like, man, I wanted to do that.
That's why I share it. So you're with me, bro. You're with me in my heart as I run for you.
Like, bro, that's like what I wanted to do, but Mike's doing it and I'm not. Okay. So how do we kickstart these long form habits into short sprints? So like 24 hours to normalize it. And so you just like, until you hit this point where it's you're no longer going to negotiate with this goal, you won't set the proper choices that create the habit. And so now's the time I would say, like, look, anything you set as a target at the beginning of the year, it's probably time to start stop playing around with it and actually try to compress that into the next 10 days. And I fully expect some of us who set a goal in December to do something right now. You've made from January to the end of May, they made no progress on it, but from the end of May to the end of June, you're going to have made massive progress on it simply because you were challenged to do it and compressing that into a uniform time so that you can't get out of it anymore. Okay. Outside of that, let me give you some thinking models and mental models and beliefs that I want you to write down. And I want you to begin programming as we head into the second half of the year. So I'm just going to give these to you for my own thinking time. If you don't like them, replace them. But you need to have 4 main mental models and 4 main beliefs. If you don't like one of mine, replace them. So you don't have to use mine, but you need 4. And 4. Number 1, mental model, inversion thinking. What does inversion thinking mean? If some of you already know what this is, you essentially take your goals and you invert them. And you look at, if I wanted to write a book, you would invert this into, if I wanted to guarantee that I didn't write a book, what would I do? And so from this inversion, we get a lot of different things that now we can invert again. And when you invert the inversion, you get the what was called a negative paradigm for what you need to remove so that you can achieve the goal a lot easier. So you would say, look, I'm not going to write TV. I'm not going to watch TV until the book is done. I'm not going to go on social media until the book is done. I'm not going to... XYZ, you kind of get the negative environment, the negative source, and you remove those things. So inversion thinking would be a mental model that would essentially take any goal that you set and it would invert it almost immediately into like, what do I need to remove so that this goal is possible? Which is, if you remove all of the trash, all of the positive, progressive activities necessary are a lot easier. Mental model number 2 would be anti-fragility. Anti-fragility. What does this model mean? It means that stress equals adaptation and that things that hurt you make you stronger. Assuming that everything in your life is fragile, you can simply look at what's breaking and you can build systems inside of that that flourish when things are getting weaker or chaotic or hectic. So antifragility would be a frame mental model. It's a perceptive mental model. How do I build the perspectives necessary so that what would kill the old version of me simply makes the new version of me stronger? When someone is antifragile, they are incredibly difficult to demotivate. They are incredibly difficult to destabilize because they're no longer pursuing comfort. They're pursuing adaptation and progress and strength.
Boom.
A fragile person is the easiest person to beat. Anti-fragile thinkers, I don't want to compete with these people. I can, I have, I don't want to. I would rather avoid them if they are in the same space as me because they're not easy to kill. They're like me. So how do we build this anti-fragility model? We start to reclassify pain and we reclassify discomfort and we begin to view the things that are difficult as inherently beneficial for us to experience. Number three, self-sovereignty. Self-sovereignty. I don't mean this in a spiritual sense. I mean this in a neurochemical sense where a person who's chained to the opinions of other people is not self-sovereign. They need approval. They outsource their emotions to the circumstances around them. Are you having a good day or a bad day? Well, depending on the level of self-sovereignty you possess, I can look at the statistical outcomes most likely to occur, because if you're outsourcing your emotional state to the things around you, then you're going to have a good day when things are good and a bad day when things are bad.
Yeah.
So self-sovereignty is this idea of no one determines my emotional state except for me. You know that phrase where it was like, I am the captive of my fate, blah, blah, blah. I think it was Nelson Mandela who said that. The dude was in prison when he wrote that. So his life is not going very well. But if there's anything to pull from this man's life, it's the amount of self-sovereignty that he had over the way he felt. And so when I'm feeling something, it is always coming from a belief. Now, the belief architecture event in August will help you because it will create, it's not just the way you feel, it's the belief that you have that's driving the feeling. Mm-hmm. And so self-sovereignty is the ability to make sure your beliefs are calibrated so that no man or woman can control the way that you feel except for you. And then the fourth mental model would be the model of batching or temporal batching, which is the ability to look at your life as a collective sum total of choices and realizing that I am a product of the net lean of my choices. It's not one choice, it's choices in totality. And so when you can get this, you can get this idea of like, no matter what this week looked like, you have next week to make different choices. And this will help you from getting stuck inside of one bad day, one bad hour, one bad moment, the sum total of your choices and the lean of those choices, if they are batched in the right direction, are going to contribute to your destination and where you end up. This also allows you to separate the moments where you find yourself reactive and get yourself back into a place of being strategic and not reactive. We've all made reactive choices before, but if you know that one reactive choice isn't going to kill you, it makes it a lot easier to position yourself to go back to a strategic choice.